In this week's episode, Kate Perry and Jenny Stone discuss the IR35 off-payroll working rules. They discuss what the IR35 rules are, what practices should do when engaging an individual, either on a self-employed or via a limited company. They also cover what happens if caught by these rules.
Accountancy on Prescription by RBP, one of the leading firms of medical specialist accountants. We know what you find tough, but don't you worry, as we know our stuff.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Accountancy on Prescription. Today I'm joined by one of my partners, Jenny Stone. Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
All good. First day back at work, so diving straight into a podcast.
Okay, so today Jenny and I are going to talk about IR35. So this is a term that's been flying around for the last few years. And we just wanted to clarify, I think, exactly what IR35 means, because I'm never sure, because it doesn't say what it is. IR35 doesn't actually tell you anything about what it relates to. We thought we'd clarify exactly what it means. So, Jenny, let's start with that. What is IR35?
Yeah, thanks, Kate. I think probably you rightly said earlier, didn't you, that actually IR35, it's been around for 24 years now. So it was first introduced in April 2000. But I think probably people more know it now as sort of what HMRC refer to as sort of off-payroll working. But IR35 was introduced in April 2000, and it was first introduced to stop. So basically, if you're an individual working for an organisation and you should really be an employee of that organisation on the payroll, it was introduced to kind of stop people who are really employees, but they chose to then set up a limited company and work through that company. So I think, Kate, it was introduced in April 2000, mainly for IT consultants, because a lot of them were working for big organisations, setting up a company to try and save tax because they don't pay national insurance. The organisation doesn't pay employers NI, so it was a cheaper way to use their services. And when it was first introduced, it was very much the responsibility of that individual with the limited company to decide were they caught by the IR35 regulations. But that did all change in April 2017, or certainly changed for the public sector first, in that what the government changed is to say it was no longer the individual's responsibility to determine IR35, but it was now the employing organisation to actually say, this person who's coming to work for me, they want to be paid off payroll, are they caught by IR35 off payroll working rules? So that's sort of a bit of the background, Kate, of the way IR35 has come in and also changed.
That's right, Jenny. And I think that in April 2017, of course, it came in for the public sector only. And of course, that caught all our clients who are clearly doctors. And I know from memory, a lot of my clients who were working for hospitals were getting letters to ask whether they were thought to be off payroll working. But of course, what we need to remember is, whose decision is this? Because I still get, and I'm sure you do, I still get a lot of clients saying, oh, well, this person wants to be a locum. And I have to say, well, actually, it's not their choice. But I do know that the difficulty at the moment for a lot of our clients is when I give that response, they then say, well, if they're not a locum, they're not going to work for me.
Yeah,
because I find somebody else to work for.
Agreed. I think, Kate, this is the thing. The rules have been in place for a very long time, but there was a very clear change that happened in April 2017 for the public sector and April 21 for the private sector, in that it is the employer, i.e. the person that is taking on this individual, it's their responsibility to determine it. So before April 2017, I would have a GP practice and I'd go to them and I'd talk about their locums and were they really employees. And they would turn around and say, oh, but they've got their own limited company. So before April 17, I'd be like, oh, no, that's great. That's their responsibility. And if HMRC say they're an employee, that's their responsibility to pay the tax and everything. But that all changed in April 2017. And it's now the employer's responsibility responsibility. And I agree with you. I hear this a lot, like you, that practices say to me, no, but the locum wants to be paid to their company or as self-employment, even though really they're probably an employee.
Yes, that's right. So let's go through when IR 35 actually does apply.
Yeah, okay. So what we're looking at is a person working for an organisation really self-employed or are they an employee? So, you know, when I talk to GP practices, I will say to them, if you've got, say, a locum that is working for you regularly, i.e. they do the same session week in, week out, and even it can be as little as one session, Kate. I remember I had an investigation, so it wasn't so much about an individual who had a limited company, it was just an individual locum. And this was probably like 15 years ago. And HMRC were questioning, were they really an employee? And all they did was one session. They did like a Wednesday morning because the partners had their partners meeting, and they did one session a week, but they'd been doing that for 2 years. They were also on the website. They got invited to the Christmas party. So they were really treated as an employee. So HMRC came along and said, well, hang on, this is not a self-employed individual. They are part and parcel of your organisation. So if you've got somebody that's working for you on a regular basis, i.e. same session, week in, week out, then they are really an employee of the business and they should go on the payroll. So if they actually are invoicing you via a limited company, then they would be caught by the IR 35 off payroll working rules. And the issue now is if HMRC investigate, and I had, Kay, a little while ago, actually, about 2 years ago, I had a PAY investigation. I had a practice that got a questionnaire, a payroll questionnaire. And on one of their questions, it said, do you pay any individual off payroll? And thankfully, this client actually doesn't use long-term locums. You know, it is literally ad hoc holiday cover. But that question was very much leading to, you know, are there people working for you regularly off payroll that would be caught by these rules? And as I said, I think, as we've talked about, it's not that person's choice. It is the employer, because they would be responsible for the tax.
That's right. I think we ought to clarify, perhaps, we have sort of moved into talking about self-employed people as well as limited companies. So just to be clear, the term IR 35, strictly speaking, is a term that's only used in respect of limited companies. But in fact, the rules that we're currently looking at actually cover both individual GP locums working through a limited company and those individuals just working as GP locums, because actually the same rules apply when we're looking at it. And we're looking at it to a certain degree from the employer's, or should I say the engager's perspective. They're not an employer, because we're saying that the person isn't an employee. So we have to use the term engager. And it's their decision as to whether this person is to be treated either as self-employed or whether you can work them through a limited company. So I suppose the question there now really to ask is, after saying what I've just said, would they all necessarily be caught by either the self-employed or the IR 35 rules?
No, not at all, Kate. So I think I've still got locums that work on a very ad hoc basis. So if you are a GP locum and you've been asked to go to practice for, say, 2 weeks annual leave cover, and you're just there and you do 2 weeks, and maybe you go back again in 3 months and you do another annual leave cover, you are not working regularly. You are very much working on an ad hoc basis. So to kind of not be caught by the IR 35 of payroll working rules, it's got to be about that you as the individual is picking and choosing when you work, where you work. There's also no obligation for you to be offered work, and there's also no obligation for you to accept work. It's very much you're deciding on a job-by-job basis what work you're going to do. I think the issue is that a lot of locums will tend to have more sort of regular work at the same practice, because they're obviously, you know, that's what they're used to. But if you're not working regularly, you know, you're doing a few weeks here, a month there at one practice, then absolutely fine to invoice by your limited company, because you couldn't be seen to be an employee of that organisation.
So what do you think about this notion that, well, I've got these people who work a long time in the practice, but it's all right because I make sure that they take one whole month off during the year. Do you think that's a safe way of looking at it? Or do you think it should be longer than that, perhaps, the break?
I kind of would say you should try and have long breaks, but it's got to be seen to be that it's not regular. So a member of staff can't take 6 weeks off work. So I think you could look and say, okay, you know, you work somewhere maybe for 4 months and then you take a couple of months off. But I think there's got to be other factors. Like I said to you, Kate, you know, one of my clients, they were listed on the website as a member of staff. They were invited to the Christmas party. I had one client that took on a locum and said, well, if you decide not to work, you've got to give us 2 weeks' notice. Well, no, a locum can actually go, yep, I'm available next week. Yes, I can work, or no, I can't work. So, you know, some of my practices, what they do is they'll offer the locums work and those locums will turn it down because there's no obligation. You know, if you are truly self-employed, there's no obligation for you to accept work, just like there's no obligation for the organisation to offer you work. So obviously, if you're a locum, you're working very much, you know, on an ad hoc basis.
Well, I think that's often how most of our clients try and work, is that they have a pool of GPs that they work with. And so if they've got a good pool who are used to the practice processes and how the systems within the practice work, but actually you've got enough of a pool to actually chop and change, so that somebody might for a few weeks have the same sessions each week, but then they might take a break. And then when they come back, they have a different
and I
session.
Think agreed. I think when practices talk to me, and if I talk to them about having a break, I say, well, they need to be doing different sessions. It needs to be seen that you aren't committed to them working Monday, Tuesday, that they'll take a break and they'll come back and they might do a Wednesday or a Thursday, or, you know, that it looks different. And Kate, one of the other things that maybe it might just be worth covering is about substitution, just to sort of explain what substitution is. And then maybe we can talk about why we think it doesn't always work for GP practices. But Kate, I remember when we used to go on those tax courses before they moved to being virtual, and one of the lecturers would always say that actually, if you've got a case and they've provided a substitute, then there's no way HMRC can say that they're an employee. So that's always a really good thing to be able to do. But just to explain about what the substitution means is, if you've got a locum and let's say they've committed to work an annual leave, they've committed to working, say, I don't know, six sessions in the week, and they wake up on Monday morning and it's a really lovely sunny hot day, and they go, you know what, I don't really want to work today. And they contact the practice and they say, you know what, I've decided I'm not going to work today, but instead I'm going to send my substitute, Dr. Smith, to do the sessions that I was supposed to do at the practice. And what would happen is the practice would still pay that contracted doctor. So whether that was to their limited company, they would still pay the limited company for that day. And then that limited company would pay Dr. Smith. Now, that is what a substitute is. I think, Kate, you and I have talked about, it doesn't always really work in general practice, mainly because I think practices need to know who's being sent in place. They need to have, you know, carried out their checks that they would do. So I have lots of clients that, when we talk about substitution, they often say, oh no, but this doesn't really work in practice.
No. And the other problem with it, of course, is that you can't make your substitute one of the other doctors in the pool.
Yes.
That the practice will be familiar with and will be happy with. So unfortunately, that sort of scenario doesn't work. So it can't be another locum GP who works regularly in the practice. It could, of course, be somebody who has worked for the practice in the past.
Yes.
It's just it can't be one of their more regular locums. So it is a bit of a grey area, I think, as to, you know, who you use as your substitute. But the practice won't accept anyone who hasn't worked for them before. So
yeah. I agree, because I had a practice that said to me, we were talking about it, and they said, oh, well, could this locum provide, you know, we've got so-and-so that also works for us. Could they do the cover? And I was like, no, it can't be anybody that works regularly for you already. So if you're thinking, oh yeah, we'll do a substitute and we'll use the other doctor that works in the practice and we'll just swap days and that will make out that that's a substitution. No, that wouldn't work. It does need to be somebody that doesn't work regularly for the practice. And I think that's why, Kate, a lot of people say it's quite hard to do that. But what I do know is that if you do provide a substitute, and I remember, Kate, on the courses we used to go on, they used to say even if they were just provided once, you know, remember staff can't turn around to you and say, oh, I'm not coming in today, I'm going to send somebody else. So that is definitely, you know, a factor of being self-employed or, you know, working through your limited company.
And I think the way HMRC look at it is that it needs to be seen that if this is written into your contract, and of course everyone should have a contract, an employee, for instance, will have a contract of service with their employer, whereas a self-employed individual or a company will have a contract for services. So everyone should have this contract. And of course, there will be a substitution clause within that contract. But just unfortunately, having the clause in the contract, unless it's actually been utilised, HMRC may not set too much store by it. So what happens, for instance, if a GP working through a limited company is actually caught by IR35?
Yes, okay. If you're caught by IR35, and remember that you've got to kind of determine this status. I know we'll probably talk about this, but HMRC obviously have the employer checker tool where you can check somebody's status for anybody that's working off payroll. So if you run that questionnaire and it comes up and says they're caught by IR35, you know, and ideally you don't want to be caught by IR35 because it just means you're going to pay more tax. But what would happen is the limited company would invoice the practice. So they would send their invoice for, I don't know, £1,000 for locum cover, as they've done. But obviously, the organisation, the engaging organisation, runs the checklist and goes, oh, you're caught by IR35. That means they would have to put that £1,000 through the payroll and treat them like an employee, deduct tax, deduct national insurance. That money would then go to the company and, you know, the company has raised the invoice, so they would still have to pay corporation tax on that income. And then the tax that's been deducted by PAYE has to be offset against any tax payable under self-assessment. So it is a bit complicated. What I would say really to anybody listening is you don't want to be caught by IR35 because, you know, you'll end up paying more tax. You know, a lot of the reasons, you know, why people end up setting limited companies up is because they think they're going to save tax. Obviously, Kate, that's a whole new podcast about whether a limited company is really worthwhile. But if you're thinking you're going to save tax and then you're caught by IR35, you're not going to be saving any tax at all. So I think in an ideal world, you just don't want to be caught by IR35.
That's right. Yes. So you've said let's avoid being caught by IR35. So maybe we need to go through what you need to do to try and make sure that doesn't happen. So we've already mentioned providing a substitute, not working regularly for one practice. What about working for lots of different practices? Do you think that helps the situation?
I think it can help. But if you're working at lots of different practices, and let's say you work at five different practices and you do a day a week, if that's still regular, i.e. you're doing, you know, practice A, you're doing Monday, practice B, you're doing Tuesday, you're still working regularly. And let's say you've worked for those practices for 5 years and you might have only done one session, two sessions, you are still working regularly on a part-time basis for that practice. So yes, we kind of always say, well, you know, working for lots of practices helps, but not if actually the nature of the arrangement is that you're still really a regular individual at that practice doing the same sessions. You know, I always kind of go, if you know, want to avoid IR35, you don't want to be seen to be doing the same sessions week in, week out for the same practice.
I think, however, if somebody were to do a maternity locum, that's sort of a fixed contract. So I know we used to say that certainly a 6-month maternity locum would probably be okay because you are actually covering a particular individual for a limited time. Of course, maternity leave for now is a year. So I think, again, because it is such a specific, you are at the practice specifically covering this individual for their specific maternity leave, I think we can probably say that's okay.
Yeah, I think so, because you're being contracted in a sense for a purpose. So it's just, you know, yes, it's a year, but it's still at the end of that maternity, you're not staying on at the practice and continuing to work. It is very much a contract set out for the time that that individual is absent. And you are covering an absent GP as opposed to being an additional member of staff, you know. So I agree with you, Kate.
Yes. Well, I think it gets more difficult, of course, because a lot of our clients, although they try and get salary GPs, sometimes they fall into the trap of having to have lots and lots of locums because they can't get a salary GP. And yeah, that's where it becomes more of an issue, I think, because of the GPs that they use, those GPs are doing more and more work. And I think that situation isn't going to change anytime soon, particularly.
Yeah, I think this is the thing, Kate. A lot of practices where they've struggled to recruit salaried GPs end up using locums that then kind of develop into becoming regular locums because they can't recruit. We'll always flag it up in meetings and go, no, but they're caught with, you know, off-payroll working, whether it's IR35 because they're working through a limited company or they're working on a self-employed basis. You know, at the end of the day, if they're working regularly and can be seen to be an employee, they should be on the payroll. It is a problem in general practice because so many people don't want to be salaried GPs. But I do wonder, Kate, whether that will start to change given that, you know, I've had so many locums say to me that there's not as much locum work out there as there used to be. So maybe things will start to change. Who knows?
Well, I do think there's an element there of practices tightening their belts and sort of trying to limit how much they use locums. So one thing we haven't actually covered is if somebody were to be caught and the IR35 resulted in the payments for tax, or indeed for an individual where HMRC did a payroll inspection and said, well, actually, we consider this person should have been on your payroll, and we therefore will ask for the tax. So there's been a change there as to who's paying what tax. Because, of course, the self-employed person will have done their tax return and paid their tax. And, of course, then you've got a sort of double tax on the same money.
Yeah, so what would happen is if HMRC did an investigation, and remember that it's always been for self-employed individuals. If you're working as a self-employed locum and you should be on the payroll, it's always been the engaging the employer's responsibility to pay that tax. The change happened in respect of companies. So for IR35, that changed in April 17 to say, if somebody is caught, you know, they're working through a limited company and HMRC think they're an employee, then the practice is liable. So for now, whether a locum works through a limited company or self-employed, if HMRC investigate that practice and they say, you know, we've gone through all of the nature of this role, we determined that they're an employee of the practice, then the practice is liable to pay the PAYE, to pay the tax, the national insurance, and the employer's national insurance, together with interest and penalties. Now, there is a thing that says, as obviously, say, a self-employed locum will have paid tax under self-assessment on the income they've received, then you can, and I think there's a thing that the locum has to agree to this, that it can then be offset against the liability that the practice has to pay. But of course, the practice hasn't paid any employer's national insurance. There'll also be interest, there'll also be penalties. So it's really important that practices and the partners feel comfortable in that the people that are working for them are being dealt with correctly in terms of for payroll purposes.
So to help our practices, there is a tool, an HMRC tool, isn't there, to help them come to a decision as to whether the person they're taking on can be paid through their company or as a self-employed individual.
That's right, Kate. So there is the HMRC's employer sort of off-payroll working tool. And what we'll do is we'll put the link to that tool in the show notes. So what HMRC say is if you go through and you answer, you know, the questions correctly to reflect the nature of the arrangement, then whatever the result is, HMRC will stand by that result. So they say, as long as you've completed it accurately, we will stand by the result it gives. So if it says you're not caught by IR35, then they will stand by that. So I would encourage all practices, when you're taking on somebody and they are asking to be paid through their company or as a locum, just run that tool, print out your answers, and then just store that in your employer file, just so that you've got that in case you ever get investigated. The only thing I would say, Kate, is I think there are certain questions you can answer that will give you the result you need. So I had a practice that completed it, and I'd spoken to them and I'd said, well, what you're telling me, I think they're an employee and they would be cool. And then they ran, I think the locum ran the tool and sent me their answers. And there's a question, you know, just off the top of my head. I mean, I can't remember all the detail of the questions, but there is a question that says, do you provide your own equipment? Now, if you answer yes to that, it will say that you're not caught by IR 35 and you're not caught by off-payroll working. But in my mind, a GP, let's say GP locum goes into a GP practice, they're going to go into a clinical room that is set up with a desk, a computer, a couch, scales, you know, all the medical supplies that they need to see those patients. So I think that's very different to, say, a self-employed builder who turns up on a job and provides all their tools, all the machinery that's required to do the job. So there are questions that you can answer that obviously help get the result that maybe you want. But what I would say is, even if a locum comes to you and says, oh, no, we've completed the tool, as the employer, and you are the ones that are going to be liable for this tax if it's determined wrong, is I would go through and do your own check. And then if you've got a locum that's saying, well, I want to be self-employed or I want to work for my company, and the tool comes back and says, well, no, you're caught, then obviously you need to go back and discuss that with the locum. The tool also asks about substitution. So it does ask the question about whether they can provide a substitute. So yes, you could tick yes, they can. But as Kate said earlier, you know, it's not just enough to have it in your contract. Ideally, what we would always recommend is that you can use that even if you just do it for one session, because that really helps your case to say that actually you're not an employee.
Yes. And just to clarify, that tool is known as the CEST tool. So that's yes. CEST, which means check employment status for tax. But we will put the link along with this podcast. So just finally then, there's one element that we haven't covered, and one of my clients sort of got caught by it. We're well aware that within a partnership, particularly where there's several partners, particularly where some are perhaps don't work full time, where one GP partner will be the locum and will take on holiday sessions or whatever it might be. And quite often what they will want to try and do is put that money through a separate limited company. But that's something that they can't really do. And in fact, when I look at this, when practices do this, I personally like to try and get practices to put these sessions, not show them as a locum, but to show them as a prior allocation. The only downside to that, of course, it doesn't give a true picture of the practice GP locum cost. Yes. So there is that element to consider. But what is the situation for a GP partner's own limited company?
Okay, it's a big no-no, okay? A GP partner cannot have a limited company and invoice their own practice for work, okay? So it's just a no. Okay, we've come across this over time, haven't we? And there certainly was a time, I certainly think before 6th of April 2017, there were certain accountants, I think there still are accountants, that will advise and say, well, no, if you put it into a company, you can save tax. Bottom line is, you are a GP partner in that practice. So therefore, you make the decision, you run the organisation. You just can't have a limited company that pays you for sessions. And actually, you know, as I said to you, Kate, if a practice is using anybody off payroll, they need to run the employer tool. So run the session. As it's called, run that for your GP partner who's going to invoice you via their limited company. And one of the questions actually says, you know, will the worker be an office holder? You know, for me, you are a partner in this practice making decisions about who you employ. You make decisions for the end client. And therefore, the moment that you click that, straight away, the HMRC tool says you're called. As far as I'm concerned, Kate, it's a big no-no. And we like to keep our clients on the right side of HMRC. There are plenty of accountants that, you know, will set up limited companies for partners and tell them to put money into it. But you get caught, it's clearly anti-avoidance. And I just, so I certainly don't agree at all. And I know we all think the same.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's really caught by the anti-avoidance income shifting rules, because you're shifting income into a more beneficial tax situation. And really, you shouldn't be setting up limited companies unless it's for a reasonable commercial reason. There's got to be commerciality behind everything that you do with your limited company. I think the only occasion where you could do that is, and we do have clients who do this, is if there is a contract that isn't really to do with the partnership, but that the money, for some reason behind the organisation that's making the payments, it has to flow through the partnership. So the partnership is merely a conduit for the money. Mm. And quite often this might be in the area of teaching. I don't know if you can think of any other areas that might be completely separate.
Yeah, and I think, Kate, you know, we have lots of partners that have their own limited companies and they do other things. So, you know, they might do a bit of private work and they've got their own limited company. That's absolutely fine.
Or indeed locuming for another practice.
A different practice. Totally. Yes. I totally agree with you. I'm not saying if you're a GP partner, you can't have a limited company. Yes, you can have a limited company to do your other work. What you can't do is if your GP partner is invoiced for work you are doing at your GP practice that you are a partner in through your limited company. But yeah, lots of our clients have limited companies and do other work, and that's absolutely fine.
Okay. I think probably, Jenny, we've covered pretty much everything there is to know about self-employment and working as a GP locum for a doctor's practice. So
yeah, and I think the key thing to take away really is if you're the practice, do the CESS tool, so this off payroll working tool. I think that's really important. And then obviously if you are the individual working through the company, just make sure that you're really aware and that, you know, that you're not going to be caught by IR35, because if you are, you'll end up paying a lot more tax.
Thank you for that, Jenny. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please like and subscribe. And until next time, thank you.
You have been listening to RBP's Accountancy on Prescription podcast. For any updates, please visit www.rbp.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at RBPCA. The contents of this podcast is for general guidance and informational purposes only and does not constitute any form of advice. The information provided by RBP is of a general nature. Appropriate and tailored advice or independent research should be obtained before making any decisions. RBP does not accept any liability for any loss or damage which is incurred from you acting or not acting as a result of listening to Accountancy on Prescription.